The past few weeks here on JerryPark.com, we've been in a very festive mood, handing out of awards for MMA, boxing, and last but not least, the trio of combat sports is complete. We're handing out our 2007 Jerry Park Wrestling Awards, and who better than the producer and co-host extraordinaire of Fight Network Radio and live audio wrestling. You can listen to Fight Network Radio on Sirius Channel 186 or on HardcoreSportsRadio.com, live audio wrestling every Sunday night. On the law, liveaudiowrestling.com, or on a whole host of different stations if you're up in Canada. Of course, I'm talking about John Pollock, the man of the peeps. How's it going, John?
Oh, it's going great, Ariel. Glad to be here on the JerryPark.com year-end awards for professional wrestling.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you. You have a huge wealth of knowledge, and it's kind of interesting that we've left wrestling for the last, because if you ask us, of the three combat sports, it's really the one that's had the worst year.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. A very dismal year to look back at professional wrestling. I think that's how 2007 will really go down in history.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. Not only of all the, the stuff outside the ring, which we'll get to in a second, but really in ring, there were a lot of hopes going into 2007, some great angles, some great matchups that we've thought were ahead of us, and really I think everything sort of fell flat, but we'll get to talking about that in a second. We've got our awards, and when you look at the awards, we always like to start with the number one, the male wrestler of the year. We like to start at the top. We don't like to work backwards here. So John Pollock, break it down for us. Who is the male wrestler of the year for 2007?
This was such a tough category to look at, because I think for male wrestler of the year, you really have to look at a lot of facets. If you're looking strictly in-ring, I mean, Hiroshi Tanahashi over in New Japan put together an unbelievable body of work for 2007, but I just have such a hard time giving someone like Tanahashi wrestler of the year when he's in New Japan, which is, not done tremendous this year outside of a handful of big shows. So I think you have to look at the in-ring ability, a drawing ability, and, connection to the live audience. And I think looking at this year, you can look at some of the guys in Ring of Honor that had really strong years, but for me, the complete package headlined 11 pay-per-views this year, attracted a very different audience, and for my money, I think, doesn't get a whole hell of a lot of love. Get ready for the internet to cringe. I'm going with John Cena.
Wow. I had a feeling that that's where you were going, and I must say, I think I heard 12 hearts just stop on the internet, because obviously this is a guy that's much maligned. A lot of people love him, but many people hate him. I mean,
absolutely, and I think if you look at this year of what John Cena's done, in the past year to 18 months, he has brought on an entire new audience for the WWE, aiming at children, and if you look at the WWE's marketing now, very much now skewed towards towards that different audience that Cena brought in, and if this was any other person that had the same in-ring, let's look at pay-per-view after pay-per-view, and some of the guys that he was not only able to have good matches with, but I would argue great matches with, whether it be Umaga, a semi-decent match with Great Khali at the One Night Stand pay-per-view, which to me is MVP potential right there, that you could have a match with Great Khali. Unbelievable four-way match at Backlash, the matches with Shawn Michaels at both WrestleMania and The Raw in England. I think if any other performer in the WWE were to have those same matches, not named John Cena, I think it'd be a much easier sell. And John Cena, I think he's a guy that is just so many people have such a hatred for this guy that I think he often, deserves some love at some times. And I am going to be the controversial one to go out and give it to him here at the end of 2007.
John, I'm sure you've heard about the whole controversy involving John Cena and CNN, that interview where it was kind of edited to make it seem as though he was admitted to taking steroids. Do you think that, fine, the WWE put out the uncut version of it, and still to this day, I find that his answer was a little confusing, and he was kind of skirting around the issue. But that said, do you think that that whole incident, because we haven't seen him in the ring since then, do you think that that will play a negative impact on the way the fans perceive him once he comes back from the injury?
I don't think it'll play into any of the perceptions of the fans. I mean, you look at some of the mainstream interviews that did occur this year with WWE talent, and it was atrocious. To me, the more damaging piece to me was John Cena appearing on Larry King Live over the summer, where he came out and directly said that there were no steroids found in Chris Benoit's body, and telling outright lies, saying that he's disgusted at how the media has just assumed that the WWE are a bunch of steroid monsters, and then when the Signature Pharmacy list comes comes out, all of a sudden he's hush-hush. So I think really that the mainstream fans, or even the hardcore fans, I don't think you're going to get that kind of a backlash stemming from that incident.
Do you think there's any chance that we'll see Cena come back from the injury before WrestleMania?
No, I can't see him coming back. I know he's working out right now like a madman trying to do that, but to me, it's going to be touch and go if he can come back, and I don't think they would know till March, even mid-March, whether it's a green flag or a red light for Cena at WrestleMania, and why rush his return like that. I was very happy that they didn't throw him out there for the cheap pop at the 15th anniversary show. I think Cena being away for a long time is arguably the best thing for his career, to the point that the fans will pop when he comes back, and I think he should hold off till the summer.
All right, so John picks John Cena as his Wrestler of the Year, and I think you just made 15 new enemies, but I give you credit, my friend, for picking Cena. A bold prediction indeed. All right, so when you got a male Wrestler of the Year, you got to look at the women, and this past year, as far as female wrestling, especially in the last few months, I think it's really gone up a notch. I mean, obviously, Trish Stratus retiring, that was a huge blow. But you've got a whole new division in TNA with a whole bunch of stars. I look specifically at Amazing Kong, who's done some great work, Gail Kim, etc. And if anyone listens to Live Audio Wrestling, they know who you like to favor as far as the female wrestlers go. I think that might be your answer, but she's on the sidelines right now. John, why don't you give us your female wrestler of the year?
Well, for those of you that do not listen to Live Audio Wrestling, I have always maintained that I think Candice Michelle has a ton of potential. I am not going to be absurd and call her the female wrestler of 2007. I am going to go, though, with Gail Kim. Like, as you said, the TNA, the women's division, it's right now, it's. I'm very intrigued to see where they go with it. I think with Awesome Kong and Gail Kim on top, you have the pillars for what could be a very intriguing division and something very different from the WWE product. That being said, the WWE, I've been very impressed with Beth Phoenix and how they have protected her on Raw as that kind of stalwart in the women's division. You do have a natural program with Candice Michelle when she comes back to do that program. So definitely I think women's wrestling right now is somewhat in a state of a possible revival. I think when Trish Stratus left, at the same time Lita did, it really fell on its ass where you didn't have necessarily the talent there to warrant the division. And I think now as we're going to 2008, I hope some more emphasis is placed, especially in TNA, which I'm looking for, to do something different and present the women in a serious fashion.
Yeah, you can make a strong argument right now for that feud between Amazing Kong and Gail Kim and the whole division in general, that's the best thing on TNA right now. I mean, it's kind of sad to say when you got guys like Kurt Angle, Booker T, Christian Cage. I mean, such a depth in their roster. But really, that feud going on and some of the new stars that they're starting to build up, I hate ODB. I find her annoying as hell. But at the same time, the fans love her. And she does kind of, you know, she gets a reaction out of you. So you got to give her credit for that. That's probably the best thing going in TNA right now, right?
I think the women, it's been such a simple storyline that here was Gail Kim, who lost to Awesome Kong right out of the gate, and it's just a continual battle to try and beat this monster who wants to destroy the women's division. For me, I would rather see Awesome Kong with the title right now and Gail Kim chasing her for the title. I think that part's a little backwards, but as you said, it's one of the few things on TNA that is not something that you have to dissect in your head to see what is happening here and what the storyline is happening in front of you. It's a very simple storyline.
Yeah, good call. Her name is actually Awesome Kong. I was calling her by her old moniker of Amazing Kong, so thanks for pointing
out. Yeah, I have
that
to get those legalities out of that. She doesn't want TNA copywriting.
Candice Michelle, this is the last point on the women's side of things, but I mean, when she first came on the scene, she was just another face. When it was a time when WWE just threw out women out there every single week, we had no idea who these girls are. Did you ever think that she would actually become, I mean, you look at a girl like Tori Wilson, who's been around for almost a decade and yet hasn't been able to kind of get over the hump as far as her in-ring abilities. How impressed are you with Candice?
I'm very impressed with Candice because, I mean, she could easily keep that job by simply being, you know, a Playboy cover girl looking hot on camera. But she's someone that, you know, I've talked to a number of times, and she's someone that'll get to the arena really early. She wants to be working with all the agents, learning different moves, trying to make an entertaining in-ring match. And for that, I mean, that's almost all you can ask for some of these women that are really thrown into the deep end on live television in an industry where it's really not even promoted. The fact that, you know, become a strong worker. It's on her to become an increasingly better worker. So, I mean, you have to applaud that from this side of the microphone. And I think that Candice Michelle, is she ever going to be a legitimate top five female performer of all time? Probably not. But I mean, for what the effort she's portraying right now, I think you have to respect that at the very least.
All right, moving along. To me, one of the most disappointing aspects of the wrestling year was the fall of the tag team division. I mean, this was a division back in the day where you had guys like the Hart Foundation, the British Bulldogs, you know, Demolition. I mean, just great, great talent in WWE, not to mention, you know, all over the country with the Rock and Roll Express and the Freebirds, etc. And this year, it just seems as though guys are put together for a couple months. They'll eventually feud with each other, and then, you know, they'll go back on their singles career. That said, there were a couple of tag teams that did stand out. Which of the bunch deserves Tag Team of the Year award in your mind?
Well, I think in order to give out Tag Team of the Year, you have to go below the national scene. I mean, WWE, it's really the makeshift team of the month, where you don't get those franchise tag teams anymore that are together for a number of years. Ditto with TNA, where, I mean, for a good part of the year, we had Ron Killings and Adam Pac-Man Jones representing their tag team division. So for me, for my pick, I went to Ring of Honor looking at the Briscoe brothers, who to me are the best example of a tag team that can not only steal a show, but can headline a card. And can you even imagine the WWE headlining with their tag team champions right now? So I think the Briscoe brothers, they're very innovative. I think a lot of people don't care for their style, thinking that it lacks a lot of psychology. But I think you have to look at what that Ring of Honor audience wants and how consistently the Briscoe brothers deliver that.
Yeah, absolutely. Their match against Kevin Steen and El Generico at the last ROH pay-per-view Man Up, probably on a lot of lists for matches of the year. That said, I need to get your thoughts on LAX because of everything out there, so disappointing to me. I loved LAX. I mean, when they first came out a year and a half ago with Conan, and we all know about the problems that he's had with TNA, but, I mean, these guys were the absolute best thing going on TNA, and now they're just relegated to you know, the curtain jerkers, and they'll probably feud with each other in 3 weeks and then break up eventually. Did you have as high hopes for the Latin American Exchange as I did?
Going into 2007, I mean, I had LAX as my tag team of the year for last year. They were such an amazing act from day one when they were put together with Conan. I thought the three of them were just outstanding. Here were guys that can work in the ring, and you have Conan on the stick. When you took out Conan from that equation, they just completely fell. You can tell that management does not believe in these two guys to talk. And I think in the ring, I think they're fine, but unfortunately, they need a mouthpiece, and Conan was just so perfect in that unit. Here was a team that they would talk about political issues. It was just such a dynamic tag team in TNA, and I thought they were really onto something using LAX, and unfortunately, it's, you know, number 561 of things that TNA did wrong this year.
Yeah, and I'll throw out number 562, Team Pac-Man. You mentioned them earlier. That whole situation hiring Adam Pac-Man Jones, a complete disgrace, and highlighted by the fact that they actually, you know, used the throwing up the money.
That was horrible.
I mean, just totally tasteless. In your mind, I mean, was that the lowest point? I mean, TNA has been blamed for a lot of bad things, but that right there, when I was watching that, it almost made me really, truthfully, and I know a lot of people throw this out there, but I was disgusted with the tactic that they use, bringing in that whole aspect of his past into the ring.
It stands out to me as the most tasteless gimmick done in 2007. And I mean, unfortunately, professional wrestling gets the bad rap of producing a lot of tasteless moments. And, you know, when you see stuff like that, it's really hard to defend professional wrestling when here you are mocking a guy who's been paralyzed on national television.
All right, so Pac-Man against their whole host of opponents would never be nominated for feud or storyline of the year. But while I said it was a bit of a disappointing one, and I don't want to harp on the bad stuff, there were some great storylines that had me coming back either on WWE television, TNA, and even in Ring of Honor this side of the globe. In your mind, what was the best storyline that had you wanting to come back each and every week to see what would happen, and then eventually buy the pay-per-view for the blow-off?
I thought the 4 weeks going into WrestleMania 23 this year, where you put John Cena and Shawn Michaels together as a tag team, and each week they teased that Michaels would hit him with the super kick, and week after week, Michaels would hold back and would not do it. And right at the point, the Monday before WrestleMania 23, when they were together afterwards, and you believe these two are a team, boom, he hits Cena. And I mean, each Monday night here at the Law, we host parties down in downtown Toronto at a bar. And this place exploded for that super kick. And I thought the television leading up to WrestleMania was some of the WWE's best in years. So I really enjoyed that Cena-Michaels feud and the storyline that accompanied it with them, where they put the tag titles on them going into Mania. I thought it was excellent on the WWE's part.
Couldn't agree more. If I had to choose another, I would probably give the nod to MVP and Matt Hardy. I thought that the build for their feud and their eventual breakup now, and we're still involved in the storyline right now, I thought it was very old school on the part of WWE, kind of one of their old angles where they let it build, and they had some nice vignettes with each other. And even when Hardy was injured, they still kept it going. What did you think of the whole Matt Hardy and MVP feud as it stands right now?
I thought that it just was just a great example of how you can get mileage out of one storyline. Like, here we are, like, I mean, 6 months into this program, and it's still fresh for when Matt Hardy returns to do the eventual blow-off with MVP. And I think this program, more than anything, really forced MVP to up his game, not just in the ring, but on the stick. And this is going to segue nicely, because MVP is my pick for most improved worker of the year.
All right, so you're skipping a couple of categories here and going straight for MVP. Before we get to MVP, I just wanted to ask you, is there a storyline going on right now on any of the promotions television that actually has you excited, that you think is actually being done well and that could actually be a contender for the 2008 feud of the year?
It's really hard to look at any storylines right now. I mean, I really enjoyed the Shawn Michaels, Mr. Kennedy program going into the last pay-per-view. In terms of something that's on the plate for 2008, we've seen the seeds planted right now. I'd really like to see them pair Edge and Undertaker together going into WrestleMania 24. I think it's a natural program. It's a fresh matchup. Unfortunately, they botched it a bit, I think, by not having Edge go over at the last WrestleMania this year to keep that undefeated streak alive. But I think it's still a very viable match for WrestleMania, and I hope that the seeds now have been planted and hopefully are going to blossom come March 30th.
If you were booking WWE right now, you know, you have the undefeated streaks, as you mentioned. How would you lay this match out? Would you give the nod to Edge, kind of their up-and-coming superstar? I know he's been around for a while, but really now getting a chance to shine with the belt. Or we all know how much Vince McMahon respects The Undertaker and that whole streak. Would you allow him to officially retire whenever he does with the undefeated WrestleMania streak?
You know, my natural thought process whenever you're dealing with something like this is that you always have to be cognizant of your future. What's going to draw for you 5 years from now versus what's going to draw for you tonight? And that's why my natural inclination is that, obviously, you put over the younger guy. That being said, Edge is a top guy. There is no dispute about that. I don't think he needs a win over Undertaker. And that WrestleMania streak is, you know, the WWE's equivalent to the Roger Maris previous record of 61 home runs when it was a very viable statistic. And I think to just erase that, I think is something that would be a mistake and that fans don't want to see end. I think that has defined The Undertaker's run in the WWE. So I would put Undertaker over in the match because I think Edge, it doesn't hurt him losing to Taker. And it's a program, though, that enough people will be able to get into feeling that, okay, this is the year that Undertaker's going to lose the big match.
Interesting. All right, so we'll have to wait for that come WrestleMania 24. All right, you mentioned earlier MVP getting the nod as your most improved wrestler. Talk to us a bit about MVP. You know, maybe this is the one lasting impression that Chris Benoit has done on the wrestling industry in terms of on a positive side of things, where his feud with him earlier in the year really seemed to have stepped his game up. Why did MVP get your vote for most improved wrestler?
I look at 12 months ago when MVP was working that program with Kane, and it was just atrocious at that part. And to look at MVP now as not only a guy that has improved in the ring, improved on the stick, but he's a guy that legitimately, I think, could seamlessly be elevated into a main event slot on SmackDown and would not receive any backlash from me over it. I think MVP has done so well just as a talker. He's one of the few talkers that the WWE has produced. I think that has been their worst problem is that trying to bring up all these guys, give them the scripted promos, and expect the next Rock to be churned out. Now, I'm not going to compare MVP to The Rock, but he's someone that has developed a personality. It's a personality that every fan can relate to, of being the spoiled athlete. And in the ring, I mean, here's a guy that, I mean, studies tons of tapes from Noah and All Japan from the glory days in the 90s. He's someone that is a true student of the game, and you see that come out in his matches. And I think one of the most maybe undervalued positives for MVP has been JBL on commentary, who I think has made a huge, huge change in the perception of MVP and getting him over to the audience watching. And I think that's going to be one of the big stories in 2008, is losing JBL on commentary and how it will affect certain talent. Because I think JBL, when he puts his heart into it and gets behind a guy, he makes the difference between just watching a guy come up from developmental and being perceived as being a necessary part of the program, and that's what he's done with MVP.
I don't want to stray too much away from our awards, but you bring up JBL, and he's involved now in a really solid angle with Chris Jericho, and one that I don't think a lot of wrestling fans thought was even coming. I mean, I thought they did a great job of building it up at the last pay-per-view, Armageddon, and now it seems as though they're going full-blown with JBL coming over to Raw and going to be back wrestling full-time. What are your thoughts on John Bradshaw Layfield coming back wrestling full-time?
I mean, from a fan perspective, I mean, if we're going to get promos every week like we did on Monday with Jericho and JBL, I mean, that's tremendous. To me, I think JBL is more valuable behind the microphone with Michael Cole, because WWE has never been great at blossoming and developing talent for announcing roles, as we've seen year after year with Jonathan Coachman falling on his face every time he's there to replace Jim Ross. I think he's really going to be missed on the microphone. In terms of a run with Jericho, it should generate a lot of interest, and I think the promos will be excellent. You have to look at SmackDown right now, where they're really, really low on the heel side, so I'm very surprised that they're moving him over to Raw and doing the program there, where I think they would have much more freedom, if you know what I mean, on SmackDown versus the Raw political environment of where they're going to be placed. But I think JBL coming back, it's a situation where they're low on heels, and he wants to get back into the ring. But unfortunately, the in-ring gain is the announcer role's loss. And I don't think JBL brings to the ring what he does on the stick doing the announcing every week.
One last note on Most Improved Wrestler. A lot of new guys coming out just in the past few months. I mean, you look at Cody Rhodes, really excited to see how Kofi Kingston plays out. Is there one guy that you kind of have your sights set on to maybe be that breakout star for 2008?
In terms of a young star that's just been brought up, I mean, Cody Rhodes he was someone that the fans did not backlash against when he was first brought up, but I think they've really dropped it with him. I haven't really enjoyed the hardcore Holly angle that they've done with him. It's really just kind of set him into that lower mid-card status right now, and that's where he's going to be perceived. I think whenever you present a guy to the audience and you slot him in that role, that's where fans mentally always assume you should be. So Cody Rhodes, he is still very young, and he's another guy that I think can talk on the stick if given the chance, but of course they've taken the microphone away from him. In terms of becoming a top star, I think 2008, they have to do something strong with CM Punk, because it's clear that he is over and they've got to get him onto one of the main shows. And hopefully with SmackDown and ECW doing the gimmick there where you can go on either show, he'll be showcased more. But he needs a solid program right now, which is lacking, and I don't think Chavo Guerrero is that program.
Yeah, absolutely. A very surprised to see Chavo vaulted all the way up to the ECW championship feud, but let's be real, the ECW championship feud is not exactly the most prestigious
opening match on the pay-per-view.
Exactly. All right, so with the Most Improved Wrestler, the flip side of it, you got to look at the worst wrestler out there. A ton of candidates on this one. A lot of them seem to be wrestling in Orlando nowadays. That's just my opinion. What are your thoughts on Worst Wrestler of the Year?
Well, you know, the cynic in me wants to go with Adam Pac-Man Jones, but he technically never really wrestled in TNA, so I don't think he's almost disqualified from this category. And therefore, I'm going to hand it over to the great Khali. Just an atrocious performer, and his work with Hulk Hogan on the anniversary show clinched it for me.
Wow, I thought you were going to give the nod to my pick, Kip James, just for the just for the ring attire in itself. That's the only reason.
Oh, God, it has to be some inside joke with TNA where Kip just tries to come up with the worst costume possible, and they just give him the thumbs up, because it's just atrocious. Some of the outfits he brings onto television there, ripping off Candice Michelle. It's I don't understand Kip James, and I honestly am surprised that him and BG are still with the company, to be honest with you. They're just tolling around there in TNA with really nothing to do.
Just another thing to look out for on TNA, the Kip James against BG James feud, which seems to be
awesome.
Yes.
Can't wait.
Can't wait for that one. All right, let's talk more positive stuff. Match of the year. I had a hard time trying to think of one off the top of my head. I mentioned probably the best candidate earlier in our discussion, but what's your vote for wrestling match of the year?
Yeah, I, like you, Ariel, had a real tough time. This is one I had to kind of go back and look at some of the matches this year. I mean, I really enjoyed Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness, but to me, that one, I think, almost suffered from being a taped pay-per-view where the expectations going in were so high that it was almost impossible for them to deliver. In terms of match of the year, I mean, there weren't a whole hell of a lot of in-ring matches that, you know, jump out at you. Like, usually in a strong year, you can easily pick out, oh, well, this I remember. This is something that stands out for me. This year really didn't have that match, but if I have to pick one, I'm going to go back to Backlash of this year with the four-way on top there with John Cena, Shawn Michaels, Edge, and Randy Orton. And I think I give this one, I kind of bump it up a bit just because of the nature of the match. Being a four-way, I just hate four-ways. I'm not a big fan of three-ways. And for the workers, it's one of the most difficult matches to do because you have to intertwine four bodies in there, keep the interest there. And I think the WWE almost has it now down to a science of how to put these matches together. And these four, I thought that match was just so excellent that night and just executed perfectly with John Cena going over.
One of the best surprises for me, you know, talking about match of the year, was with Cena and Michaels on the Monday Night Raw when they went to almost 50 minutes long. And that was something that the WWE never really did, where, you know, usually the main event comes on at maybe 10:50. You know that it's going to run 15 minutes or so. But here they started at the top of the second hour and just kept going and going and going. Absolutely love the psychology behind that match and the way it was all planned out. What were your thoughts on Cena and Michaels, their Monday Night Raw marathon match?
I love the match, and I thought the way they executed it was perfect, where they put it on at the top of the second hour and were just saying, well, we've got to get to this. This interview isn't going to be happening at the end of the show. It was almost like, what's going on here? And it was so much better psychology-wise for the viewer at home as opposed to the Iron Man match, where you know you're sitting down for 60 minutes to watch a match, and really it's going to come down to the final 5 minutes. So I thought the way they did it was much better, and it was great to see a deviation from the norm. And for all those people who thought, oh, you can't go longer than 10 minutes on TV, really proved that theory wrong. It was an excellent match. And again, you know, John Cena, you look at some of the matches this year the guy was involved with, and it's a very steady body of work he had throughout the year. Is he the best worker in the world? Absolutely not. But as a consistent top performer that has been put in a position where he has to draw on house shows and draw on pay-per-view after pay-per-view, I think he's doing the best possible job of anyone in the WWE right now.
Yeah, amazingly, I looked at TNA as a company that should be trying to do things like that, and they actually did try the one-hour Iron Man match when Impact was only an hour long, except they totally dropped the ball. I mean, the match it took 15 minutes to start. It was Rhino, Christian Cage, and Kurt Angle, and just a horrible execution on their part. So frustrating to see how many chances they get to put on great feuds and matches, but they just keep thinking of ways to drop the ball. So let's talk about the best pay-per-view of the year now. We got the match of the year, and you mentioned your pick was on Backlash. Do you give the nod to Backlash then?
I'm not going with Backlash, and it's right. You mentioned how TNA, you say the word frustrating, and I think everyone echoes that sentiment in that you know what this company is capable of, and I think that was never more evident than the TNA Bound for Glory show in Atlanta. From the crowd heat to the in-ring work, I thought that pay-per-view was outstanding, and I think it was just the production of it and the live crowd added so much to that show. You had the big surprise in there with Jay Lethal winning the X Division title that I thought it was, you know, as good a show as TNA can possibly put on. And I remember we interviewed Christian Cage about a week or so after that, where he echoed the same thing, that is what we are capable of putting on, and that's the standard that we have to keep ourselves up to month after month. And when you see them constantly drop the ball, when you know they're capable of putting on a tremendous show, it's just so frustrating watching that company.
In your view, how important is it for TNA to move away from the Impact Zone in Orlando? Because that pay-per-view, as you mentioned, was in Atlanta, Georgia. They're starting to do more. They've got another one coming up in South Carolina in February. Is it important for them to have at least all their pay-per-views on the road right now to sort of establish the fact that they are a viable number two promotion?
I think you have to. When you're in Orlando show after show, you're perceived as a regional promotion, and the fans are just going to get burned out. Suddenly, what is enough for the fans? They have seen everything from these performers week after week at the tapings, and you see that when they go outside of their home state there in Florida, and they go to places like Atlanta, or they go to Greenville, that the audience is just, it's so fresh to them, and seeing the live product, they respond in kind to it. So I think that TNA, that has to be one of their biggest pushes in 2008, is getting the product out to different markets, and conveying that on Spike TV, and you know, utilizing videotapes when they go over for the New Japan show in January. I love the idea that they're doing that with the special in January, and constantly getting that product out to look national on television.
Yeah, very surprised that they'll be airing a special Global Impact in January. I think it's a great idea as well, and I wish they would do more things like that. All right, so you shocked us with John Cena being Wrestler of the Year. Now you're giving the love to TNA. Is it possible that you will give the vote to TNA, Total Nonstop Action Wrestling, as the promotion of
Not a chance. I will not be giving. TNA will be my worst promotion of the year outside of that one pay-per-view. But for best promotion of the year, I did go with Ring of Honor, I guess, to maintain some credibility here on the internet for people that are just cringing at me right now. But I thought for Ring of Honor, here's a company that they have found a way to make money on an independent level, where they can sell their live shows, get on pay-per-view. They haven't been able to make a whole lot of money there. They're still fueled by DVD sales, but they're making money, and they made small steps this year to try and increase their audience going to pay-per-view, which I really hope pans out for this company, because it's one of those types of pay-per-views where if you watch it for the first time, I honestly believe you'll become a regular viewer of the pay-per-views, and it's just a matter of getting people to purchase the pay-per-view for that first time. I know the numbers up here in Canada have not been stellar, and it's just those people that are, you know, if you're complaining about what you're seeing in WWE and TNA and you want to sample something different, this is the best product to try. And I mean, in terms of storylines and in-ring work, that's never been a question with Ring of Honor having another solid 2007.
Do you feel as though in order for Ring of Honor to really establish themselves as number three, to kind of replace the void that ECW left when they went under, that they need to go to live pay-per-views? Because it seems as though, you know, they do cater to the internet audience, yet you know, there's been some talk that that's really not in fact true. I mean, that the internet audience will buy the pay-per-view regardless of whether or not they know who's winning or not. You know, we've seen that on countless occasions. But that said, do you think that they need to go to a live pay-per-view monthly or at least bi-monthly to really actually have some success?
I don't think they're at the stage right now where they could sustain the losses that would come with a live pay-per-view, and there would be lots of losses for an initial show. And unfortunately for Ring of Honor, they don't have the war chest behind them monetarily to sustain a big loss like that. So I don't think live pay-per-view, it would make enough of a difference. I don't think you would get necessarily more fans buying a live pay-per-view of Ring of Honor because they don't have the television to get out there and let people be aware of that. I really can't see Ring of Honor playing on a national television audience. I don't think that Ring of Honor is necessarily ever going to be that national threat or that national influence that someone like WWE or TNA can be, because they do market to a niche audience. And unfortunately, that is their core fans. They're a very loyal amount of fans. But in terms of going nationally at the state they're in right now, I don't think that it's viable for them at this point.
You know, more to that point, we've heard some rumblings that they've been talking to the Versus Network, a potential maybe 1 hour weekly show. I think it would be a great fit, especially for Versus trying to establish themselves as a sort of combat sports network. I mean, Fight Network is number one. Let's just put that out there right now. But
you get the cheap plug in there instead of me. What's better?
Absolutely. Have you heard anything about a potential relationship with Ring of Honor and the Versus Network?
I have not heard anything about that, but I mean, Versus Network is someone who, as you can see, is definitely trying to get strong into the combat sports. I mean, you see the rating that they just did for the WEC last week for that outstanding show, and I mean, getting in there with their live, their Versus Fight Night boxing. I mean, that's definitely an audience that they're going after, and Ring of Honor, their best bet is to get with a network like that that is still trying to establish its in its infancy. So I think it would be a natural fit. The key is, you know, putting the right product on there that's going to drive people, whether it be to pay-per-views or to live events, which is tough because Ring of Honor is only running X amount of shows, and what's going to be the goal of television versus the cost of producing it?
All right, just two categories left, and the second to last one that I always enjoy, best book, DVD, promotional item, whatever type of miscellaneous little tool that was used in the world of wrestling. Some great candidates, especially this year. It seems as though the wrestling book has been revived. What would you give the nod to one of those as your best book or DVD of the year?
Well, I'm not going to be going with any John Cena products, but in terms of this year, when you look at some of the books that came out of 2007, they were some of the best, and I thought the top one was Chris Jericho's book, A Lion's Tale, just edging out Bret Hart's book, which both two tremendous books, and with Jericho's, I mean, just reading this book like a number of times where I just laughed out loud. The guy was just an excellent writer and covered a period in wrestling that, I mean, I grew up with, and as did you, Ariel. So, I mean, reading it from his perspective, it was just such a unique look at this person who, the book was not even necessarily about pro wrestling, but just with this goal that he was constantly trying to reach towards, and reading about the journey to get to that far-off goal and then finally getting there. It's just an excellent book to read for a wrestling or a non-wrestling fan, and I'm not working for Chris Jericho's publicity company either.
A lot of people have even said that this might even trump Mick Foley's first book, Have a Nice Day, as the best wrestling book of all time. Would you give it that much amount of praise?
It's, to me, right there with Foley's. To me, Foley was the first real big hit for a wrestling book. So I think it's always going to be kind of have that vaunted spot on top of the wrestling book mountain. But to me, Chris Jericho's book was equal, if not better, than Foley's book. To me, I think I would put Jericho's ahead of Foley's. I just enjoyed it that much.
If, in a word, if there's one guy out there that is yet to write a book, maybe one of the last soul, it seems as though everyone's written one, but is there one book that you'd love to read that you haven't had a chance to kind of learn about the story behind this guy?
Vince McMahon, no question. If he was ever honest about putting a book together, I think it would be... It could be the greatest book of all time. I mean, you look at some of the figures in professional wrestling that if they put together an honest book, and I do use that word honest, as we saw from, you know, examples like Hulk Hogan's book that could have been great but were just works of fiction and atrocious. But I guess Vince stands up there. Jim Ross is someone who's always talked about putting together a book, and with all the offices he's worked with and the positions he's held within the WWE, that's a very captivating book as well, along with Kip James.
Yes.
Kip James, you can't forget.
Absolutely. Yeah, very, very good point there. Okay, final one, not your usual award, but definitely one that's important for 2008. Is there one feud, one angle, one storyline that, you know, even something that's not being worked on right now, something that has really no shot in hell, but if you were the booker for any of the major promotions, putting two guys together or more, what would you like to see come 2008?
Well, I mentioned this earlier. I think Edge Taker is an easy one for 2008 going into WrestleMania. I hope they don't botch this Ric Flair angle right now. Every week I watch, I'm just going back and forth. This has the potential to be just unbelievable for the company. If you do it properly and you build up to WrestleMania where he goes into the Hall of Fame the night before, and then the next day you put it over as the biggest wrestling match of his life in Orlando, the heat for it would just be out of this world. And I think it's just, I'm very frustrated right now that they're throwing this Triple H match, because that ideally is the match you could do at Mania, and you're throwing it out. Not only is it going to be on free television, but on a night where viewership is going to be nil for the company. It seems like such a waste to throw that out, because after Hunter and Randy Orton, I mean, where do you go with Ric Flair? Who is a viable contender after you've beaten the world champion and you've beaten the guy who everyone perceives as the number one, if not number two guy on Raw?
Yeah, you and I kind of disagreed on this simply because I couldn't agree more, but simply because we've always seen WWE kind of put out that match. I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of, you know, bait and switch. I would be actually kind of shocked if
I hope there is. Yeah,
worked a 15-minute match on New Year's Eve. But for now, I'm liking the way it's going. We'd be remiss, finally, if we didn't talk about the Chris Benoit situation. You need to speak about this. You know, if you're talking wrestling in 2007, now, you know, several months down the line, looking back on it, and I must say, I mean, the way Live Audio Wrestling and Fight Network Radio covered that whole thing. I mean, that show with you and Mauro following the news was just, I mean, it's hard to actually put a word on it, but it was just very enlightening radio to listen to both of you guys kind of debate the issues involved. As you look back on the tragedy of the Chris Benoit situation, just give us your thoughts and feelings on it all.
Well, first of all, thanks a lot for the kind words, Ariel. There's no question that the most difficult show I've ever done was that day after the Benoit news came out back in June, and we've been going back looking at some of the shows we did this year, and that was one I actually sat down and listened to some of it yesterday, which I have not done since that show happened, and it was just such a surreal story to actually believe happened. Like, I myself am only about 23 years old. I started with the law back in 2001, where I was working with their website, and at the time they operated chrisbenoit.com. So kind of my role was just kind of working on his website, putting out a newsletter for him, and that was kind of my entry into live audio wrestling. So I got to meet him a number of times, and I by no means would classify myself as a friend of Chris Benoit's or someone who even knew him, really. I only met him a handful of times with interviews and stuff like that. But it was one that really, really just registered for you, because everyone, to a man, stated how Chris Benoit was easily the most kind-hearted person you'd ever meet in the industry. And if you were to line up 200 wrestlers and point out who could possibly do something like this, he would easily perhaps be the last person you'd pick. So it was the story of the year for me in 2007 was Chris Benoit and the ugly can of worms that opened up in professional wrestling, where suddenly people were poking around, seeing, well, what is wrong with this industry when all these people are dropping dead and there's, you know, there's pill use, there's steroid use, there's painkillers. Why is this happening? And now it's leading to congressional hearings in January, and it's arguably going to be the most influential story to ever occur in professional wrestling, and it's really uncharted territory. I'm not severely optimistic that we're going to see a lot of changes within professional wrestling, despite a lot of people getting on the ledge that, oh, finally, this is the end of professional wrestling, and finally, we need regulation. We've seen this so many times occur where finally we're going to get rid of steroids from the industry, and I just don't see it happening, unfortunately. I hope it does, but it's just a tragic story to look back on and just see this guy who put together such an amazing body of work in his career, and he'll always be remembered for that final weekend of his life.
Very well said, John. And with that, we close the book on 2007. Thanks so much for joining us. Wow, this is one of the longest interviews we've ever conducted on JerryPark.com. A great look back at the year of 2007 in the world of wrestling. Like I mentioned earlier, John, you can catch him every single day, weekly, on Fight Network Radio, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen to them on Sirius Channel 186, as well as on HardcoreSportsRadio.com. And the flagship of it all, Live Audio Wrestling, every Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, on a whole host of channels across Canada, on Sirius, and through their website. You guys,
yeah, and sometimes I sleep too. But I want to thank you very much, Ariel. I mean, for you as well, you do a bang up job over there at JerryPark.com, and we love having you on Fight Network Radio, someone that can chat boxing, mixed martial arts, or wrestling as eloquently as you can. So, you know, continued success in 2008, and we love having you on our show, and likewise coming on to JerryPark.com.
Thanks a lot, John. Happy New Year, and you know, those jokes that Mauro lays down on you every week, just keep stubbing.
They're tough, man. It's unbelievable. Just send him a boo, Mauro at thefightnetwork.com.